The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The following episode may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Atlanta Vision Institute. The Atlanta Vision Institute was the first in Georgia to use SMILE, the most advanced laser eye surgery procedure. This procedure is done with a high-tech precision laser. It's simple, takes about 6 to 8 minutes in its entirety. It's an easy recovery, requiring minimal post-op care. Most people are amazed at how effortless it is. You're going to experience substantially improved vision just a few hours after this surgery. Dr. Ashraf was on staff at Johns Hopkins University. He's board certified, and he's completed over 40,000 LASIK procedures. So go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute. Check this out. You can mention my name and get 20% off a consultation. To learn more, go to atlanta2020.com/Matt. That's me, M-A-T-T. atlanta2020.com/Matt. Go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute at atlanta2020.com. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. Do you hear the birds chirping on this summer day? I know it's not officially summer, but any of us who have kids out of school, that's when summer starts, when kids are out of school. Technically, the season is spring, but come on, guys. It's summer. It's hot as fuck. Let's start with an iTunes review, ladies and gentlemen. This review is by SZ0Gator. Sorry, SZOGator. Okay, so why is it that even when I think I'm not going to be interested in the person you're interviewing, I get to the end and think, wow, that was awesome. I have loved each and every interview as I have learned something about Atlanta that I didn't even think I wanted to know! Give this podcast a chance. You won't be disappointed. Thank you so much, SZOGator, who left this on June 6, 2018. I really appreciate that. You too can have your review read right here on the show by dropping a review on iTunes. If you've got a phone app, you scroll down and do the thing. If it's on your computer, it's slightly harder. I know they don't make it easy for you guys. iTunes is amazing, but one of the things they're not great at is doing that. You can also leave a review on Stitcher or the other platforms, but you're probably going to want to drop me a note to let me know to look there, because who can remember all these fucking platforms? You can also send me a note personally, mattbdavis@icloud.com, or find me, Matt B. Davis, on all platforms of social. On today's program, Beltline CEO Brian McGowan. Now, what did I say last week? We are getting into the nitty-gritty. Last week, a MARTA guy. This week, a Beltline guy. We are going hardcore in the paint on Atlanta. Many of you told us you really enjoyed the MARTA episode, and I believe this one you're going to like just as much, if not more. He's got a fascinating background. He talks about the heck's going on with the city. It's some good stuff. Without any further ado, let's just get into it, guys. Let's keep it rocking and rolling. Away we go.
Check, check.
Check, check. And I was actually going to have you come to me, but I'm actually glad I got to come here because I know of the Beltline as a thing, as an idea, as a thing I spent a lot of time on, but I've never been I haven't got any meetings. You know what I mean? It's not really my thing. So it's kind of cool to actually
see the office.
See the, you know, you guys are an actual actual place. And it's also like, I mean, I've, besides Angel, I've spent as much time as anybody on this thing, just to let you know. I mean, I know you know who Angel is.
Of course.
Okay.
I ride the entire Beltline regularly with Angel.
Well, okay, so that's the thing too that we have to talk about, because in 2015, I decided to do a race, a running race all the way around the Beltline, and we were really like, afraid to tell anybody.
And then I heard about these races.
But then I heard the new guy is like, oh, he wants to do the bike one, the belt grind.
The belt grind.
He totally wants to do it. I'm like, well, if he does that, maybe he'll do my running one. So we can get to all that.
Okay.
But let's back up, because that's all very current.
Fair enough.
And I want to, like let's learn. So where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, so good. I'm originally from the Bronx, New York. So I'm first generation American. My mother's an Irish immigrant, and my grandparents, my father's parents, both immigrated from Ireland. So I grew up on the East Coast.
And you're relatively young to be a first generation. Like, that's usually not people.
Well, I'm 49.
I know, but you're not 69.
Well, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm 46.
Yeah.
And a lot of our parents, a lot of people our age is grandparents or great grandparents are from Europe.
Yeah.
But not just.
Yeah, right. No, it's, yeah. It's,
anyway.
But we definitely had the kind of, immigrant experience, left a country where there were no jobs and the economy was struggling and landed in the Bronx. My grandfather was a bus driver and my grandmother cleaned homes.
Did he know Robert De Niro?
No, I wish he did, but he did not.
Because, he was also a bus driver.
Yeah, that was a different kind of bus driver.
Or was that wasn't really him, right?
No, absolutely.
Do you even know what I'm talking about?
There's a movie.
Yes.
Yes, I know.
It's called The Bronx Tale.
Yeah, of course.
The classic.
That's right.
He plays a bus driver.
That's right.
So what when you say a different kind of bus driver...
No, my grandfather he was blue collar, worked really hard his whole life, sent all of his kids to college. So I grew up in New York, New Jersey, then ended up in California. So I lived in California. So I'm probably mostly a Californian. I lived in California for 20 years.
Right. And they let you be in charge of the Atlanta Beltline?
Yeah. Isn't that strange?
Because it's two things that Southerners immediately reject, New York and California. Right?
Well, it's true. I've heard that. But I've been in Atlanta for going on 7 years now. I came to Atlanta as the CEO of Invest Atlanta.
Okay.
Which the Beltline is actually a subsidiary of.
Right.
And Invest Atlanta is the economic development authority for the city. So I did that for 3 years. But I came out of the Obama administration.
Okay.
So I was Deputy Assistant Secretary of Commerce ran the U.S. Economic Development Administration.
Okay. Did you have a .gov email address?
Yes, I did. I've had lots of .gov email addresses.
But I'm trying to think where that is. It like, how does that work when you're in the when you're under the presidential administration? Like, what are you like dot what?
I believe it were .gov.
Just .gov?
Commerce.gov.
No, but your email address was your name at.
Yeah, B. McGowan at, I can't remember. I think it was, it's probably commerce.gov. I don't remember exactly what it was. But I worked for Governor Schwarzenegger before that.
The governator himself.
The governator himself.
Would you believe that I just watched Terminator 3 with my son again? And I have to say, it holds up pretty good. Because they started watching one of the other ones, the way more recent one, and it was horrible. I don't know if you've seen that one, but they CGI. Is it required
when you're of course you have to. Yeah, you have to know all his movies. He quizzes you on it regularly.
This interview is going to go great, by the way. Seriously, like, we're only 4 minutes in, we're talking Schwarzenegger. Seriously, they put this movie on. I think it's Terminator Genesis, and they CGI'd young.
Terrible.
And it takes you out of the movie.
Yeah.
But
they jumped the shark on a couple.
Oh, beyond jump the shark. I don't know.
Yeah. But then they came back. There was the more recent ones were a little better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they had some bad ones.
Oh, okay. Well, the one I watched was great. Claire Danes was in it. It was quite. I remember she was like the thing, like late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Claire Danes was like the thing.
That's right.
So what were you doing for the governor?
So I was.
Wait a minute. We might have lived in LA at the same time. When were you in? Or were you in?
So I was in Southern California from 1988 to 2006.
Dude, we could have.
Were you there?
We could have passed in Ralph's or something.
Ralph's.
Where did you live?
So I lived in mostly Palm Springs, California.
Oh, Palm Springs.
The Inland Empire.
Then we didn't see each other that much because I only went there a couple times.
You were in L.A.?
I was trying to do the Hollywood thing, so I was I was right there.
Oh, cool.
Third and La Brea was sort of the last.
I have a son, a 26-year-old son who lives in Hollywood right now.
Right?
Yep. Living like a rock star.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's what you do when you're 26.
Yeah, he's having fun.
That's what I
Maybe
did.
Maybe too much fun.
I lived like a
broke rock star? Does that make sense?
Well, he's a broke rock star. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah,
and is he?
He's got like six roommates.
Is he right? Yeah. That's exactly how you should do it.
Apartment.
Exactly. Is he pursuing the arts?
He works for a digital media company
called
Sapient Razorfish, and he's having fun.
Sapient Razorfish.
Yeah, that's.
I think Razorfish would have been a cool enough name on its own.
It was. So there were.
They merged
Nitro, and it was Razorfish. They merged, and it's Sapient Razorfish. Is I believe.
That sounds
the name of the
so 2018. Sapient Razorfish.
It does, doesn't it?
If I remember to go back and edit this properly, I can put a really cool sound graphic in there. Okay, so you're working for the governor.
Yes, so I was Deputy Secretary of Commerce for the state of California. So my job was to be the state's lead economic development official.
Okay, do you have some sort of financial background?
No, my background is economic development.
But what does that mean?
Political science. So my undergraduate degree is in political science. I have a graduate degree in politics, economics, and business.
Okay.
So it's an MAPEB.
Sorry, I'm just turning up my little volume thing here. Okay.
So what does economic development mean?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I'm still learning myself after 22 years. No. In my first job out of college, I interned for the city of Palm Springs in economic development.
Did you work for Sonny Bono?
Sonny was our congressman at the time. That's funny you said. He had just finished being our mayor.
Okay.
I knew him very well, and I knew Mary Bono very well. Still know Mary.
Okay.
Who became a congresswoman. But at the time, I remember... I was told that I was going to do an internship at the city of Palm Springs in economic development. I immediately started making phone calls because you couldn't Google back then.
No, you could not.
To try to ask people what economic development was. And, you know, economic development essentially is business creation, attraction, retention, and expansion. So it's
say those things again.
Business creation,
okay.
Attraction,
okay.
Retention, and expansion.
Okay.
So you want to make sure, number one, that your community is healthy economically so that everyone can participate in the economy and get a job that pays well. So you want to make sure companies that you have are staying and growing and healthy. And you want to make sure you're attracting companies to your city also. So that's the essence of economic development. There's lots of other things that economic developers do, but that's the essence of what economic development is.
Okay. And so you've been kind of involved in that since back there.
Yeah. So I started out in economic development. I then ended up working for the county of San Bernardino, California, which is the largest county in the United States.
San Bernardino,
the IE 909.
That's, and the 707? Or that's something else?
I think that's somewhere else.
Okay.
It was 909.
Okay.
So I did community development, workforce development, housing, and economic development when I worked for the county of San Bernardino. And that's what I did for Governor Schwarzenegger, too.
Okay. Did you hang out with the governor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I traveled around the world with him, and he was fascinating.
Get up and work out with him in the morning?
That was a requirement. There was a couple of requirements. One was... You had to get up and work out. You'd have to work out with him, but you had to get up and work out or he'd make fun of you. You had to do schnapps shots. So if the schnapps came out, you had to do a shot.
Right.
And you had to smoke cigars.
Right.
They're just like requirements.
Right. And how do you do in those three departments?
I'm good, but not at the same time. So smoking and doing shots and working out at the same time, I don't recommend.
Right.
Yeah. So I tried to keep those three things separate.
Right. What do you think... you learned in that job that you've taken sort of through your career?
That's a really good question. Governor Schwarzenegger was probably one of the most interesting people that I've ever worked for. He's a really big thinker. He was extremely smart and strategic and very intimidating if you were on the other side of the table negotiating against him. I think the biggest thing I took away from him was I always tell people whenever my kids would see him, he'd look at them and a little kid walks up and it's the Terminator and they're kind of timid and they slowly put their hand out and he would say, "Stick out your chest and be proud of who you are." He would tell every kid.
That's great.
And so my kids would stand at attention and their faces would change and they would smile. And I kind of took that with me in my life. It's some, you know, if you're in a difficult situation, sometimes the best thing to do is stick out your chest and,
right,
and be proud of who you are and attack the problem.
Right. Now, I just thought, my son's actually here with me today. He's waiting in the...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You should have brought him in here.
Well, the odds of us making it an entire, say, 45 minutes to an hour without him coming in at least once are pretty slim. The fact that door locks means we're pretty good.
Okay, well, that's fair. I have five boys, so I understand.
Well, here's the thing. What I was just going to say is, if we remember, as we're leaving, if you have a picture of you with the governor, and you showed him, especially because...
I have one in my office.
Then if we can show him, he will be super impressed.
Done. That's we will make that happen.
Like that will blow him away.
Cool.
I'm sure you know, like, what's really important is being cool to your kids.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So it's like I got to have my son meet John Cena. So I was like,
that's cool.
I was king of the world for like at least a week.
Oh yeah.
You know
that's
what I mean?
A big deal.
Right.
My kids would have loved that.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he gets to like tell people and they never believe him. Yeah. He's like, oh, dude, we have pictures, it's on my dad's phone. Right, because when we were kids, that was not possible. Maybe you got a picture, like maybe,
well,
but
it's funny.
It wasn't
a
thing.
I feel like my kids are really spoiled with that. You know, they've met Governor Schwarzenegger, met President Obama, they've met Mayor Reed. They, you know, my kids got to do things. My kids been on the, you know, the field for batting practice at a Braves game. They've met Arthur Blank. You know, they've met Matt Ryan and. Yeah, when I was a kid, none of that happened. Not even close.
I met Alex Trebek.
Oh, you did? Now that's exciting.
I tried out for High School Jeopardy.
Did you really?
Did not make it. Kind of crushed. But honestly, that was the highlight that I remember. It was like, you know, we took it pointing as if we're anywhere near it, but it was like the Omni downtown, and you take the test, and it's a written test, and then they come back at the end and tell you if you made it or not, and then he did like a little Q&A with us.
Yeah.
I have his autographs somewhere. But anyway, that was
traumatizing for you?
Well, this is what I didn't like. They go, we're not going to tell you your score. You were going to tell you made it or you didn't make it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't care if I failed the whole thing. Just tell me. And it was like, I think they were trying to protect us. Right? Or it was all fixed and certain kids were going to get it anyway. You know what I'm saying?
It's probably fixed.
But yeah, they wouldn't tell me what my score was. So I was pretty disappointed.
Yeah.
Because I was a pretty smart kid. But having said that, about the thing about the things is like, I don't think of that as a spoiling. I just think of it as like, you know, the fact that like they have phones and all that other shit. To me, it's like, I hope they can take the cool experiences as just like, hey, that was, I got lucky that my dad got to meet, you know, cause they've gotten to meet a handful. Like I'm in this, doesn't matter, but certain people I've met, they're impressed by basically.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have five boys.
Five boys. Yeah.
I am one of four and I'm the only boy. So I know with my dad, it was like, we're going to go until we get one. And that's how.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was, we were looking for a girl. Didn't happen.
She never came.
No, never.
All right.
No.
So what are your boys' names? Well, go ahead quickly. You have to say it quickly.
Dov, Colin, Brian, Connor, and Aiden. Got stuck on one.
Right. How, you don't have to say them, but how quickly can you recall their birthdays?
Oh boy. I could do that. I won't go through them all, but
because I only have three, and
I have one who's going to be 16 in 2 weeks.
So I have three, and I can't remember the third one's birthday.
Really, I forget their names sometimes.
Well, the calling each other the wrong names, that's standard. But I just mean like actually saying the date. Like, but then when sometimes we'll go someplace and they have to fill out a waiver or something, and the year trips me up.
Well, that's true.
Are you 09 or 07?
Yeah, no, I've done that.
Because it's so bizarre.
Yeah, my 11-year-old goes, Dad, you don't know what year I was born?
But it's just so bizarre. We're so used to dealing in like 20s and 30s. When it comes to a birthday, you're like, wait a minute, you were born in the 0-something? This doesn't even...
It's so funny.
All right, so how does one land in Atlanta? Gosh,
so good question.
It.
So yeah. Let's get
I ask
back.
A lot of good
let's
questions.
Get back to
the,
you do.
Way.
This is I
right?
like this. This is a good. Yeah, very very cutting. I served in the Schwarzenegger administration, and President Obama was elected, and I made the decision at that point that I wanted to work in Washington D.C. And I had always decided I wanted to work in Washington D.C. at some point. In my
real
life.
Real quick, does your wife, is she like, all right, that sounds like a good idea?
My wife is amazing because she has put up with, all of that crazy, hey, we're selling the house and we're moving to Washington, D.C. So she's always been extremely supportive. And, you know, the majority of that headache falls on my wife. So she has to deal with it while I'm off having fun Yeah, so she's been an angel.
But you're gonna move. But if you're gonna move your whole family there, I'm guessing to DC, right?
Yeah, that's what we did. So I wasn't sure how to get a job in, you know, as a presidential appointee, and so started making calls. And at that point, we did have Google, and so
thank goodness
started learning. You know, how do you land these jobs? I think the Obama administration had 500,000 or 600,000 resumes for positions, and so I started to get my resume, I think, in the hands of some of the right people, and focused on the job I wanted, which was working for the U.S. Economic Development Administration, which is within the U.S. Department of Commerce. Economy was tanking at that point in 2009, 2008. So I felt like, as an economic developer, if there was any time to be in Washington, D.C., that was the time. So I got a call one day from the White House, and they asked if I'd come and interview with the Secretary of Commerce. So I thought could have been one of my friends playing a trick on me. So I played it for my wife.
It said, does this sound real
said,
to
is
you?
Said, this, yeah. And we determined that it was real. And 4 days later, I was sitting in the Secretary of Commerce office doing an interview. So.
And were you intimidated?
Yeah. I do remember walking from the train station to the Department of Commerce, and I was purposely not looking up. I was purposely not looking at the White House or the Department of Treasury or the Washington Monument or how amazing the Commerce Building was, because I didn't want to be, or the fact that, you know, Marine One was landing on the south lawn of the White House as I was walking.
Wow.
I was trying not to pay attention to any of that. I just could keep my head down on the ground, you know, watching the sidewalk as I was going into the building. But,
right.
But I ended up landing a job, and it was literally probably the most rewarding career experience I ever had, because not only did I serve in the at Department of Commerce as Deputy Assistant Secretary, but I spent a year in the White House as an economic advisor on the BP oil spill.
Okay.
So that was a fascinating experience.
Were you, had it already happened?
Yes, it already happened. The White House was standing up what they call a National Incident Command to help, it was a national emergency. And they set up different teams within the National Incident Command, and I was asked to lead the Economic Solutions Team. And so my very first meeting was in the Situation Room, not the Wolf Blitzer Situation
the
Room.
Real,
the actual Situation
The real Situation
Room.
Yeah. Room.
So I had 2 weeks to prepare, and there I was, walking in the Situation Room. And
who was at the table?
It was all people you see on TV. It was you know, admirals and White House officials, and in one of the meetings, the president actually came in and sat down and participated in the meeting. So it's a great experience.
So in the middle of the meeting, president walks in. How do you not go, okay, so where was I?
Well, you know, it's funny because the story is
a pretty sweet whiteboard. But is this a whiteboard?
Yeah.
Is this the kind that they can see it somewhere else too?
No, it's not that fancy.
Do you guys have one of those in here?
No, we don't.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to get one. Because they're just fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's funny you say that, because I was actually in the middle of, I think it was my second meeting, I was introducing myself, and in the middle of my kind of introduction, the president actually walked in and sat down. And
does Hail to the Chief come on like the wrestling, at wrestling?
It felt like it should.
Right.
But it was just, yeah, it was this surreal moment, because I'd never met him before at that point, or never been in the same room with him. And yeah, he sat down, and I remember looking at the person who was chairing the meeting, you know, trying to get a hand signal to sit back down. And unfortunately, she said, please continue. And so I have no idea what I said at that
right.
point, but I tried to wrap it up in about 20 seconds and sit down. So
right. But I'm assuming at some point you like sat down with him, yes?
Yeah, we briefed him several times and, you know, traveled,
did he remember your
traveled
name?
With him. You know, he did. He was a really remarkable. So I only met him, you know, I probably in the same room with him maybe 15 or 20 times while I was in the administration. And then I came down to Atlanta. So story, I was running Invest Atlanta, working for Kasim Reed. I was living in a neighborhood where the president actually did a fundraiser, and my kids had never met him. And so we went down to the house where the fundraiser was going on. I didn't have $14,000 to get in the front door. So we stood on a lawn across the street, and the president pulls up, and he gets out of the limousine and he walks around the neighborhood and starts shaking hands with people, which was unexpected. It looked like he was just going to go in the house and we were going to wave to him. And at one point, he walked straight over to where I was standing with my kids, and like a thousand things went through my head. And I was like, what should I say? Should I say, hey, remember me? Or,
right.
And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I just shook his hand and said, nice to meet you. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he goes, what are you doing in Atlanta? And I was like, huh? It took a second right. to register that he somehow remembered me. And Mayor Reed was standing right behind him. And I said, I work for him. I pointed. And he goes, oh, no one ever told me. And then he said hello to my kids. And so that was, it was really
That's
nice.
Pretty awesome.
He's very, very personable kind of a person. I mean, right. really amazing guy.
I have a pretty large daily skepticism about government and the world and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I still look at that guy and feel a lot better about him. Forget the current guy, but better yeah. about Obama than, you know, 98% of
yeah.
people. Like at least,
yeah.
like even if he wasn't solving the world's problems, or even if there's a lot of decisions that made, you know, you learn at some point in your life that it's not the one guy, it's a lot of people around that guy. Anyway, yeah. I felt like at least this guy has some sort of soul. Like at least this is a real person.
Yeah. No, he that's yeah, the and you know, unfortunately we live in a, you know, an age where that's hard to find, and you know, but fortunately I am still optimistic. I mean, I think we have a lot of great politicians and rising politicians across the United States that I think can get us back so we can have at least civil discourse, because I think we've lost that.
I don't know, man.
I hope so. It's got to be.
I mean, or not, or it gets worse before it gets better, which is possible too.
Yeah, and sometimes things have to get worse before they get better.
I mean, let me put you this way. I figure, like, you know, there's been all these ups and downs through the years, but like I thought, well, let me ask my dad. My dad's 86. He's lived through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, Dad, has it ever been this bad? He's like, nope.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit. And he's not even on social.
That's scary.
I know.
That's scary. Yeah.
And he's not even on social.
Yeah, I feel like you have to be optimistic. You know, I think we have to, you know, I do think we have some great rising politicians across the United States that will hopefully get us back to the point where we can be civil to each other.
But when they come into the broken system, don't they just get absorbed by it?
Well, I don't think that's always the case. I don't think that was the case with President Obama. I don't think he got absorbed by it. I think he tried to stay above it. I think what you're seeing now is this complete breakdown in civility, you know, where we can't even have civil conversations about things that we should be talking about. And so we're having a lot of people just don't talk, you know, which I think is worse. I think President Obama tried to, you know, encourage dialogue and civil dialogue. I think, you know, we have to somehow try to find our way back there. You're looking very skeptical.
No, I'm just, because it's like, we could talk about so many things. And again, like that's sort of how I roll, is this very freeform thing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, we should have a deeper conversation about that, but we should also talk about the Beltline.
No, we're definitely, and that's also like, that's also what I'm thinking is like, okay, like, let's just talk about the damn Beltline. Fine. Well, because I know we're going to get there. My style is like, I don't pre-list questions. I don't come in with a list. I have a general idea what we're going to talk about. Yeah. And then it goes where it goes.
Yeah.
And obviously,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And it works for me. People seem to like it. So anyhow.
But let me finish. As long as those are the ground rules, let me, if I could go back and just kind of tell you how I ended up in Atlanta, because I'm not from the South. I'm not from Atlanta.
Right.
And sometimes
and
I
then
do.
Can we do a quick coffee refill update?
Oh yeah, okay. Absolutely.
We can check on Jackson.
Yeah,
and we'll go deep dive into Beltline.
Okay, so those jobs, those political appointee jobs, the average life of a political appointee in Washington D.C. is 18 months. You know, so usually
I feel like it used to be. It seems to be about 9 days these days.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's like 18 months is an old number. Good point. Yeah. What happened in the mooch, you know?
Right.
We had a week of the mooch, right?
I know, right? Could have been one of the greatest. Could have been one of the greatest things
that
ever.
I literally would wake up in the morning and just, what did the mooch do today? I was so, I couldn't wait.
Like Saturday Night Live could just do an entire hour and a half show on that guy.
The Mooch, right. But he lasted only like 9 days, so it was kind of sad. But,
right. Can I quickly, I do want to ask you about one other thing, though, since we're in this world now. So do you watch any of the news networks?
Not much. If I do watch a news network, I'll watch CNN.
Right.
Or I'll watch Fox just for entertainment.
Okay. I want to get my information.
Yeah.
I used to turn to CNN as like, these guys are probably going to give me mostly the truth.
Yeah.
And sure, they've got some sort of agenda because they're a media company, blah, blah, blah. But now my wife watches CNN. And when I come home, it literally hurts my ears and my face.
I get that. I do. Actually, the best news is actually PBS. If you really want to watch kind of objective news that's not spun or entertainment,
but see, here,
it's boring. But
okay, so here's the thought, though. Again, we're about the same age, so I know that we come from a similar thing. When this whole internet thing came around, right?
Yeah.
And the whole, like, you know, off the couch journalists, like, hey, man, they're not going to control the news. Like, we can do whatever we want. We can consume whatever we want, right? But that's not what we're doing.
Yeah.
There's not like 25, let's just say The Guardian, just to like somebody that's like, that you're seeing a different, even though The Guardian's got its own thing, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you thought you'd wake up and be like, cool, I can consume this, I can consume this. Nope, we're all consuming those three, which are screaming at us with their rhetoric. And that sort of like disappoints me because we're not reading more. Remember, all the information's going to be out there. We're going to be able to get it.
No, because we want to be entertained, right? And so we want our news in entertainment format.
But that's what they've told us. They've told us that.
Yeah.
They've told us. Well, it's got. No, it doesn't. Listen, I don't need seven talking heads.
Yeah.
About something.
Yeah.
Two's fine.
Yeah, I think maybe not you, but I think people see it as entertainment. I mean, it's sad.
Don't you know a lot of people like you?
Yes.
Okay. She's making sure that I'm not a serial killer.
Exactly right. They were just checking on me.
You don't want to be spoon-fed garbage. Neither do your friends. Neither do my friends.
No, and I think we rely too much on other people's opinions. I think we should draw our own opinions. But you have to go to the source. You have to read something. I think we've stopped reading. You know, we like to have these seven talking heads tell us what we should think. We like to listen to people who already agree with us, and I think that's part of the problem. I mean, it is the problem is that the way we consume news, and we like shortcuts. You know, we don't want to draw our own conclusions. We want somebody else to draw it for us.
Yeah. All right. Well.
All right, we need coffee.
We need coffee. Let's get coffee.
Let's do coffee.
We'll pause for coffee. How you got here? I'm gonna. Put sugar in my coffee.
Yeah. So, leaving the Obama administration, those jobs don't pay a lot. And I had two sons heading to college and had a serious conversation with my wife about bills. And it was kind of one of those things where I know you're having a lot of fun, but we have bills to pay. And so you need to go get a real job. So... at that point, I started letting people know that I was looking for a job, and actually had a friend in the White House who told me that Atlanta had elected this new, young, rising national star mayor. His name was Kasim Reed, and he was looking for somebody to run his economic development agency. So I got in touch with the headhunter, and I threw a resume in and came down and interviewed a few times and got the job. And so... suddenly found myself in Atlanta, and I had no idea what I was in for.
What was your impression of Atlanta before you got here?
That's a really good question. I didn't have a lot of impression of Atlanta. I think didn't know much about Atlanta. I had been here, two or three times for a convention or something. You know, land at the airport, go to a hotel,
sure,
Georgia World Congress Center, back to the airport. So didn't really have a lot of impression of Atlanta. Atlanta, I think we still struggle with this a little bit, is kind of our identity versus other cities. You know, so, you know, I can say, and I would do this when I first got to Atlanta, because my job was to sell Atlanta. So I was traveling around the country and around the world trying to get people to move their businesses to Atlanta. And I would often ask people, you know, if I say New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, something pops in your mind. So it's music, or it's a bridge, or it's a skyline, or some image. So I would ask people, I said, when I say Atlanta, what pops into your mind? And the most prevalent answer I got was nothing. Like, if people just went, I don't know, you have a big airport, you right. know, isn't CNN there?
Right.
Maybe Coca-Cola, but there wasn't anything, you know, it was a real problem because my job was to market Atlanta. So I wanted to really understand kind of, you know, what people's impressions were of Atlanta so that we could create a marketing program to help tell our story better than we had in the past.
Yeah. So I was gone. I grew up here in the suburbs, and then I was gone from 96 to like 05, which, looking back was like, that's kind of when the whole hip hop thing happened. Right.
Yeah.
When, so
right,
that's
right,
kind of what we were known for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. And we are again right now.
Right.
I mean, all the top rappers in the world right now come from Atlanta.
Okay. Can you name them?
Migos.
I knew you were going to say Migos first. I knew you were going to say Migos.
My son in LA is always like, Atlanta's like the coolest
right.
thing ever.
That's right. So, but that period from. Of time, I think we were in that nothingness. And then in the last, like, I got back here in 07 and didn't know that I was like, wow, right on the cusp of like things really starting to. Because that's the thing with Atlanta is we were always that city. And I say we're always that city that's like, man, we sure are coming up. And this came up on another interview I did recently where I think where before it was like we had this little brother thing of like, come on, we're good too. You know, like we're not Chicago, but we're great too. And now I kind of feel like we're kind of like, fuck you, Atlanta. Like we're doing our thing and we don't really care.
And I feel that way. It's because I struggle a little bit with like the Chamber of Commerce boosterism. You know, because I don't think it works. You know, I know my millennial sons aren't going to like move to a city because the Chamber of Commerce says it's a great place to be, you know, and pictures of people at co-work spaces and, you know, drinking coffee and riding bikes. Yeah. Could be any city in America. What I think we miss and what other cities do really well is what is our own unique culture that we're selling? What makes Atlanta different and unique from other cities? I think we have that. I mean, I think Atlanta has incredible culture. I love bringing people from Atlanta for the first time and taking them around for a day and have them go back to wherever they come from with a completely new and different impression of Atlanta. And it's always, oh my God, I didn't know Atlanta was so cool. It's so interesting.
Dude.
Food and people
my
and
friend
music.
My friend lives in Brookhaven. I took him for a run on the Beltline in my neighborhood. He was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, people never see. So we'll jump back. But so this whole race that I do, right?
Yeah.
So I moved to the West End in January of 2015. I'll back up a little bit. I lived in Kirkwood from 08 to 15. And I would run to Piedmont Park if I was doing a super long run. And even then, there was a little bit done, but it was mostly, it was a lot of dirt over there.
Yeah.
And as time went on, I watched the Beltline grow about me, basically.
Yeah.
So then I moved to the West End in 2015, and it's dirt.
Right.
And I went and ran on it because I like running on dirt.
Yeah.
And like the first or second time I ever did it, I see someone coming my way. I'm like, oh, cool, another runner who is like running in this like wilderness. And it turns out it's my friend that I know, Clayton.
Yeah.
I go, this is so cool. He goes, we should run around the whole thing. And I was like, that's a really good idea, right? So I started talking about it, and my friend says, you should talk to this guy, Kyle. Do you know Kyle? Kyle, and I'm forgetting your friend's name, Kyle, if you're listening. This guy named Kyle Turok.
No.
He's very much in the biking, running sort of that kind of world, like tangentially to Angel, but also to the biking world. He was at the Belt Grind event.
Okay.
And he wouldn't, he's the kind of guy that wouldn't miss it. And he sent me, so they did it in 2010.
Yeah.
And he, but here's the thing. He wouldn't talk to me on the phone. I was like, hey, can you call me? Cause I'm trying to figure this out. He's like, no, but I'll send you emails. So he sent me emails and they're great. Because basically there are landmarks that, now are going away, but like how you like found the place.
Yeah.
So like, Well, obviously, double tunnels are still there. Those two tunnels, like there, that like you have to figure out how to go through
because
it's under the rail yard, and it's really unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
He called them. He called them, I think, like the crack apartments. I called them the wire apartments that are also going away. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the whole point of what I was getting to was the first year we did it, people loved it, right? It's kind of an adventure. You're going through holes in fences and like all these parts that are going the way. But even if they run on just the paved parts, there are people from our own suburbs that are blown away. The pictures they take of stuff that you and I see every day.
Yeah.
The art, the little doors, the random things, like it's amazing to them, and I kind of forget it because I run by it all the time. Yeah, but they're blown the fuck away.
Yeah,
they had no idea our city had that.
Yeah, and what we're finding is that people from the suburbs are coming down and spending their weekends on the Beltline to get their urban fix. So it's just interesting.
They're spending. I just thought they came down for the day. Are they like getting a hotel and doing the whole thing?
Well, for the day, you know, they'll come down with their family for the day and spend a day on the Beltline. I think, you know, it's just interesting that people are now. You know, people who live in the suburbs are coming to Atlanta for the spending time on their weekends in Atlanta on the Beltline.
Right. You know, and before they would like maybe come in for a Braves game
and then get out
get the hell back up to the suburbs.
Now it's cool, right? Now it's cool to be in Atlanta.
Right. However, this is some of the stuff that you know is interesting to me is that I have like so when we were living in Kirkwood, we still had friends that after a couple years were like, well, we're having another kid. We're moving to the suburbs. Like, we're not going to stay here. And I was kind of like surprised by it because I'm like, well, this is kind of where it's at, man. Like, why are you leaving? Like, my parents, it never even occurred to them, right? My parents were not going to live downtown.
Yeah.
My parents were going to move to Marietta in 1979.
Yeah.
Right? Or 81, whatever it was. But I still see it happening and it sort of like boggles my mind that people are doing that.
Yeah. I think you have to keep in mind that Atlanta, the city of Atlanta is got a very small footprint, right? So the city of Atlanta is a population of about 480,000 people.
Yeah. Looking at the Beltline map, it's actually making me feel how freaking small it is.
Well, that and that map you're looking at is not the entire city, but
I know.
Yeah, it is about. But the city, you know, for example, if this was San Diego and you drove up to Cobb County, you're still in the city of San Diego. it's just a larger footprint city. So I think we get a little too hung up on, we think Cobb County is like Tennessee. It's not that far,
you know?
And it is one regional economy, and the population of the city of Atlanta doubles during the day, and those people live in the suburbs, and that's not a bad thing. You know, I mean, I think as Atlanta continues to mature and develop and create amenities, things like the Beltline, it's wonderful that people from the suburbs come down and spend their weekends in Atlanta. Like, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that.
So I graduate college.
And if you live in one of these surrounding suburbs and somebody, you know, you're traveling around the world and people say, where do you live? They don't say John's Creek. They say I live in Atlanta.
Right. No, of course.
Okay.
So I'm 20-something guy, right? I live in the city. I got this great condo on or about the Beltline, and my life is fantastic.
Yeah.
What's going to make me – like, I don't want to live in a two-bedroom condo anymore when I get married and have kids, so where am I going to go?
Yeah. Well, there's options. I mean, this is a big region. So I think that's what's wonderful about living in a major metropolitan area is that, you know, you do have people who, you know, spend their 20s in Atlanta. They move to a suburb, raise their kids, and then they move back to Atlanta. I know a lot of people that have done that. So
right.
I think that's what's cool about Atlanta is lots of different options.
Well, so let's talk Beltline stuff. So the conversation that came up with Ryan and I that people seem to think is interesting,
yeah.
The most interesting is, you know, so I've been ground zero here on the West End, like whoosh, like,
yeah.
And first of all, faster than I thought. It's so funny because I always talk to Angel and he tells me, like, I'll say, when's this going to be done by? And he'll tell me, and I'm like, that's not possible. It's not happening. And he's like, I'm telling you, they already built the infrastructure for the thing and the thing.
That's
like,
a great Angel.
I know, right? Dead on, right? And then when what's this part called from Angel's house to Glenwood? What's that area called?
Southside Trail. Yeah.
He said they're gonna start ripping that up. I'm like, no, they're not. He's like, I'm telling you, they've already signed the thing. Track's coming up. because that was like, that's the stuff that I thought they weren't going to touch for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
So when's that coming up?
So we just purchased that. So it's about 4.5 miles.
That was the other, just before I go. That was the thing he had said. He said CSX owns it, and it's in a drawer somewhere. And we did this whole stupid Board the Beltline thing just to show them that we were here. But it's still going to take another 5 years for them to sell it. And it was this whole, how did it go so fast?
Well, the business models change. I think CSX they were rethinking their assets. And we had been for years in regular conversation, negotiation with CSX on purchasing that segment of the trail. Mayor Reed helped identify funds that could be used to buy that.
Were they in a mattress?
No, they were not. They were T-Splos funds.
Okay.
And Mayor Bottoms supported the final negotiations. And so a few months ago, we announced that we acquired that 4.5 mile segment, which is really incredible because, as you know, we have the completed section of the East Side Trail. We have the completed section of the West Side Trail, and this is going to connect the two, which is going to be really cool. And it's also, remember, it's going to connect neighborhoods in a city that was specifically designed to prevent those neighborhoods from being connected. So I think that culturally is really an important historic day for Atlanta when we connect those. So the plan is that we want to have that section open and usable by January is our date, January 2019. So we want people to be able to use it. It's not going to be paved like the East Side Trail, but you'll be able to use it safely.
By January.
Yeah.
That is exciting and depressing to me at the same time because for my race, that's the end. And we call it the Green Mile, where the kudzu is just fucking brutal.
Yeah, right.
And so it's this suffering end of the race that we're going to lose. I'm very disappointed about that.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot easier to get through because, you know, I'm a mountain biker.
You're going to... So
all the kudzu will be gone.
What about the track?
Track will be gone.
Where's it going?
They're ripping it up. CSX is tearing it out.
Where is it going, though?
I don't know what they do with it. I guess they sell those... That's scrap metal. They sell it. They pull it up and sell
it. Well, I am on the Beltline email list, so when I get the email about the big ribbon cutting, I will come down.
Good, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a big deal.
As long as I can pretend I'm important and be in pictures with you, because why else be at a belt?
Done.
I'm kidding about that part.
But you'll be able to run or ride a bike or whatever you can do from Piedmont Park to Washington Park.
Right, and that's
really exciting.
Right. Now, some of us can already do that, right? But you know, we're not supposed to.
Yes, not supposed to. That South Side Trail is not safe. It's closed. If you are on it, you are trespassing.
Right.
And I'm looking at you.
I know. Now, here's what's funny. When they were finishing the east side, I forget which exact part they were paving, but I was going... I'm not going to walk on wet cement. I'm not an idiot. But they were working on it, right? And there were parts next to it where you could be or whatever. And I was going, and I remember one time... I was there, and you know, there's always workers or whatever, but this one particular day, there was like guy like dressed like you with a hard hat on. And as I'm approaching, I can see him sort of stepping like he's coming over to sort of slow me down. And as I get closer to him, I thought, well, I'm in sneakers and shorts. I'm just going to keep going. So I made whoever that was that day very upset because he sort of did the like.
Did they yell at you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He yelled, hey, 3 loud times.
Yeah. You just turn around and wave. Hey,
no, I didn't want to rub it in his face. Okay, I just knew that he wasn't going to catch me in his hard hat and his nice shoes. But here's what occurred to me is that I was running to like Piedmont and back, and I realized, well, fuck, I got to come back. So then I had to take the streets back. So it wasn't nearly as fun. So here's the part about the West End. So I'm watching this West End expansion happen in front of me. Oh yeah. We start talking about Angel and oh, it's going to happen. So I'm incredibly impressed at how fast everything like, and the last little piece for me that made it sort of a big deal was even just the little bridges that connect. So the one that connects right over where the mural is.
Yeah.
That means my kids can now get on the Beltline from my house.
That's cool.
Right. And that's a big difference than they have to carrot over some dirt.
Yeah.
Literally just be able to ride on it. And like, so I haven't sent them off yet, like, or they haven't wanted to yet, but I've gone home before them.
Yeah.
So they've been at Angels. I've been at my house.
Yeah.
And that's a little less than a mile.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to run ahead, guys. I'm like, okay, we're going to catch Pokemon. And like, they've been able to come. And that's awesome.
That's cool. That's how, you know, Ryan Gravel says often that this is going to change the way we think about ourselves because it's going to change the way we live. It's going to change the way we move around the city. you know, change the way we get groceries or let our kids go out and explore the city. So it's exciting.
And the West End is still new enough that I pretty much wave to everybody on it.
Yeah.
Right? It's sort of this acknowledgement of like, hey, here's our thing. Because like on the East Side, you might see 10,000 people. But on the West End, I pretty much,
I do that.
So here's the thing. Yeah. So here comes all the stuff, right? Here comes all these breweries. Do we need those? Why is it going to make our neighborhood work? Do the local people who've lived there forever give a shit? Do they hate it? This is the stuff that Ryan and I talked about.
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
I don't think it's bad. I think it's good, but I think we need to think more about the history of those neighborhoods and making sure that, you know, I'm not sure that I don't think I've ever been in a gelato shop, so it's not something that I would necessarily use. I hope those owners
of this listen to this and throw rocks at your house.
and there's a gelato shop opening over there, apparently.
No, I know there is.
Yeah, and I think that's great. But my point is, I do think we need to think about what types of businesses the neighborhoods want to see in some of those places. So I think there should be people who are owning businesses on the Beltline who live in those neighborhoods. I think there are probably businesses that are located off the Beltline that are going to lose business because of the Beltline. And so we want to make sure that we're working with entrepreneurs from those neighborhoods to make sure that they're building businesses, small businesses, and we're supporting small businesses that the neighborhoods will actually want to use.
Well, that's the thing. To me, this is the gazillion-dollar gentrification question, right? Mm-hmm. And it's sociology and all that kind of fascinates me, because what if you build all this hipster stuff in the Beltline, and that's what it attracts, and people that don't like that stuff will continue to go to whatever it is that they are already going to that's on Lowry or whatever else, and they never even come over, and they don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that I think would be a shame, because I think, as we were talking about culture in Atlanta, the Beltline, my vision of the Beltline is a place where, you know, if someone's visiting from out of town, you should be, and they say, because I do this when I go to cities, I say, I want to go experience the city. I want to go, don't take me to the tourist places, take me where locals are. I want to experience culture and history. And the Beltline should be that. It shouldn't be kind of uniform, right?
Well,
that would be a failure.
But that's what Ponce is, though. Ponce City Market is a giant fucking mall.
Right. So we need less of that.
Great. One of those is great.
We want lots of different things.
One of those is awesome. Yeah. Fine.
Right.
But like I used to work down there, and I would go to Krog Street, and I would never go to Ponce City.
Yeah.
Even though the food is almost as expensive, it just didn't feel like that. It just didn't feel like going to some mall in Johns Creek. Johns Creek.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the belt. That's the unique thing about the Beltline, is no other city in America has something like this, right? This abandoned rail corridor, 22-mile loop that connects 45 neighborhoods.
But this is a thing, though. This whole rails to trails is becoming a thing in other cities.
It is, but no other city has something as big as this. The High Line in New York is a fraction of what the Beltline is.
Yeah, fuck those people.
Exactly. And we're so much cooler anyway in the future. But, the Beltline is very unique in that way. And I think, you know, I really believe that, you know, we have a city that is hard to get around, relatively disconnected. I mentioned earlier of neighborhoods that were specifically designed not to be connected. The Beltline is that opportunity to connect those things, which I think is an opportunity for us to connect our culture. So our culture right now is kind of spread out and disparate, depending on where you're from. But the Beltline could be the place, will be the place where if you're visiting from out of town and you want to see, feel, hear, taste, experience Atlanta, the Beltline should be the place where you can do that. Spend a day on the Beltline, and by the end of the day, you will have experienced Atlanta culture.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
As long as it's not all uniform, and I don't think it will be. I think, it's 45 completely different neighborhoods that I think are going to have very different character, different feel when you're going through those places.
Right, but I think most people will take, like, I don't think you're going to do the whole thing. I think you got to be a pretty, even to do the big, let's call this from Piedmont to West End, right?
Right.
This new part that's about to get filled that's going to change everything.
The J, we call it the J.
The J.
See, it's shaped like a J.
It is shaped like a J. This is almost a poop emoji. I don't know if you noticed that before.
I have noticed that.
So for the audio listeners, we're talking about right now. You can go from Piedmont Park, You already extended it to where's Krog? Where's Krog? So you do the little jig jog at Krog, and it stops at.
No, it goes through Krog Street Tunnel now.
Right. So where are we?
And goes to the other side through Cabbage Town.
Right. And so it stops here at Bill Kennedy. Probably breaking the podcast. No, we're fine. Keep going. Oh, no, you're fine.
Yeah, we're right. Trying to stretch across here. So it goes all the way down through Reynolds Town. So it goes to Bill Kennedy.
Right.
It goes
and we're talking about adding this J, which
which will connect the South Side Trail all the way to Washington Park.
Right.
Which is where it ends right now.
Correct. When that happens, I think people are gonna. I think. Don't you think people are gonna? They just can't, they just don't have that much time in the day. So maybe if they're on their bikes, but if they're walking, they're gonna stop at the. Let's say they start up here. I think like there's so much just on the east side right now. You might not ever make it. And then if you decide, okay, well, I want to try my. The people you're visiting live in the West End. You'll visit the West End part, but you'll kind of never make it. I don't know. I don't see unless you're like the super, super adventurous type.
I don't think so. I mean, I think there's going to be lots of different attractions that have different characters.
Like Ferris wheels?
No, things like Pond City Market, but different versions of it. So there's the Annie Casey site. There's Murphy's Triangle, which we own. There's the White Street, retail and experience. I think all these different places are going to have different experiences, will be destinations in and of themselves. So yeah, there'll be people who will say, I'm just going to spend my days on the East Side Trail. But I think most people are going to say, you know, let's take the kids and go experience a different part of
Belmont.
All right.
So you're the economic development guy. When they come to Lee and White and say, I want to put in another brewery or a hipster ice cream. Can somebody say, no, we want to mix this up a little bit?
No, this is America. You can do that. You can open any business you want.
But I thought you said you want to make it.
I'm saying that I think people will. I don't think everybody's going to want to just put in breweries. I think there's going to be different kinds of businesses and different kinds of entrepreneurs that are going to see different new opportunities in different parts of the Beltline. And I think that West End, you know, near where Quarry Park is going to be, I think that is another really hot spot job generator where there's going to be a completely different experience than the East Side Trail.
All right.
You sound so skeptical.
Because I am. So I interviewed the guy from Monday Night Garage, and he's great.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been there a couple times, and it doesn't look like my neighborhood. It looks like, it doesn't really look like my neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
So it there's two ways that can go, right? If all these breweries come in, it could become this cool, like, hey, for beer people, this is like you do a little tour of the things.
Right.
Or three of them fail. You know what I mean? Like, it could go either way, I feel like. Listen, you know, we're talking about the gelato. If you're listening, gelato people, you might turn out to be one. I might love taking my kids there every day.
Absolutely.
It might be fantastic.
Yeah.
But again, like, I'm so skeptical of the hipster pickle place and the hipster ice cream place being what the West End quote unquote wants or needs. But here's the other thing, some people say, like, the market decides everything. So they'll either stay in business or they won't.
Yeah, that's true. And, a big part of our focus, we have an economic development department here within the Beltline, is to support small businesses on the Beltline. So we want to make sure that, as I said earlier, we're working with entrepreneurs from communities who want to be on the Beltline and provide, some type of service to people who live in those neighborhoods. We want to make sure we're supporting those people.
So, but you just said Lee and White can do whatever they want there.
Yeah, they can. But that's not the only opportunity. There's other opportunities. There's other retail opportunities along the Beltline. If Lee and White, if there's an entrepreneur from the neighborhood who wants to do something that the neighborhood wants, they can go to Lee and White and lease space from them. We're developing programs, partnering with Invest Atlanta to help those businesses get started.
So when you work with Invest Atlanta, you just go to Lee and White or whoever the various landlords are and say, we want to put this in the neighborhood and we're going to help them do that.
If there's an entrepreneur who feels like there's a location, for example, in a specific development where they want to open up that's on the Beltline, there are business loan programs that Invest Atlanta runs that we can help facilitate so they can get a loan to open a business in that location.
Right. Okay. You know what I'm excited about? Totally changing subject. They're opening a movie theater over there on Bill Kennedy.
Yes, they are.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because the closest theaters to us now are Atlantic Station, or like, where do I always go? Like South DeKalb Malls, because I used to go there.
Yeah, there's not a lot.
So nice to have it. Close movie theater is a big win for In Town.
Yeah,
I think they're going to do quite well.
Yeah, I think so too. And that whole new section there on Bill Kennedy is pretty exciting, because that's the entrance to the new Southside Trail. So I think there's going to be a lot of exciting activity.
You're going to have the Southside Trail open in January of 2019. I can't believe
that. That is our goal. That is our goal. And so, provided we don't find anything unexpected or, you know, contaminated property, you know, that's our goal, to have it open by January.
But interestingly enough, you would think, so the CSX people, were they could have been like super greedy and just held out for a lot of money because they know how badly you need it. So were they just being nice?
I don't think they were being nice. We paid $26 million for that.
I know, but they could have been like, we're thinking $40 million. You know what I mean? Like, they're not using it anyway.
Yeah, we have great real estate negotiators here. So I think we got a good deal on that.
That's so you own it outright?
We own it outright.
So if I'm on it now, I'm clearly trespassing. So I will never do that.
Absolutely.
What's going in? What's going into the big giant? It looks like they were using it to like it looks like it used to be like a DMV. Like there's like car tests going on. You know what I'm talking about? Right there. What is that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
It's a giant warehouse space that they've torn down and they're actually starting to rebuild. It's been sitting there forever. I think it said. Southern Kings or something said the I can't believe you don't know this.
No, on the Southside Trail?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
It's like the biggest development on the Southside Trail right now. If you leave Angels, okay,
you're talking about the Annie Casey Foundation site.
Is that what it is called?
Yeah, so that's, again, we're walking back to a map. Is it right? So this is Angels.
Yeah.
It's this piece, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a huge. It's a
so what's 80?
100-acre site. So they are working on a job creation is their focus. So it's the Annie E. Casey Foundation owns that site, which is basically the foundation that's related to UPS. They've owned it for years, and they have plans now to put in. It's going to be a job generator. So they want to, you know, everything from small businesses to farmers market to shared workspace. That's going to be a job-generating site.
You know, I think Angel did tell me about that.
Yeah.
So.
Which is exciting because, as I mentioned earlier, you have not only the Annie Casey site, but if you go west of that, there's the Murphy's Triangle, which is about 20 acres that we own, that we're going to do an RFP for later this summer. So get a developer to do mixed-use, affordable housing, job creation on that site. And then you have the Metropolitan just north of that, which was just purchased by a company called Carter. So that's 1 million square feet that they're going to redevelop. And then south of that, you have Fort McPherson, which is now a giant movie studio and is going to be 5,000-6,000 jobs there. So that.
What about the people that live in the Metropolitan now? Isn't that already a pretty cool working space?
Yeah, they're going to redo it. They're going to try to keep some of them. I think most of them. They're just going to, you know, refurbish it and add more space. And it'll, again, be more jobs, more job creation, and a part of the city that really needs it. Because remember, the Beltline, when it was originally created, the idea was to get jobs, because one of our metrics is jobs. It's 30,000 jobs being created by the Beltline, permanent jobs. And the idea is to get jobs closer to where people live. So because right now we have this concentration of jobs is all along the Peachtree Corridor. So the Beltline is a way to kind of get jobs spread more equitably throughout the city, get jobs closer to where people live. So now everybody doesn't have to drive downtown. So the Beltline is going to be a big job generator. Already is. We've created 12,500 jobs already.
I feel like you made that number up.
We did not make that up. We track everything that we do and all the businesses that locate on the Beltline. We have good relationships.
When will there be a futuristic train that will go around the entire city?
I mean, on the Beltline?
Yes.
Well, we don't know the answer to that yet. So there was the MARTA half-cent referendum that was passed, the more MARTA. They're making decisions now on how that $2.5 billion is going to get spent. I think you mentioned you talked to Robbie Ash, the chair of MARTA. Did you have that discussion? Did you talk about...
Either I don't remember and or I'm just curious to your thoughts.
So there are two major sections that are being considered. And so there would be a light rail or a BRT, bus rapid transit, that would come up Campbellton Road. And then there would be a rail system that would turn and go on the East Side Trail past your house and then cut across downtown by Washington Park, go on the East Side Trail, and go up to Lindbergh eventually. So those two segments are being considered right now as part of that $2.5 billion that's going to be spent for transit in the city of Atlanta.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the last question, then we'll get to the wrap up section. Top left corner here, right? That's
the hard part.
That's the sticky point, right?
That's the hard part.
What the hell are we going to do? How are we going to get from Washington Park to Piedmont Park?
Yes, going north. So we are over the next 12 months, we're going to be working on design work for that section. That will be the one section where there'll be portions of it where trail and transit won't be next to each other, like most of the Beltline, because we're going to be using an active rail corridor for the transit piece of that. So the trail will run in proximity to that rail corridor. We're still working on the final alignments, though. But there will definitely be a way to, and we're working on it right now, to get through to Piedmont Park.
So specifically over, where the heck is it? Here's Howell Mill. I have such a hard time doing this. So here's where the massive train thing's happening here. West Marietta Street.
Yes.
This is the super dangerous part that no one should ever go in.
Yes.
Are we going to go that way? Are we going to go around it?
Yeah, so what
you can't, you can't replace all this. This is all active rail, right?
Well, there's active rail that runs, this is an active rail line here. And that's an active rail.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So are you going to go this way? Or are we going to go interior?
Yeah, so there's two potential alignments. One is this western alignment, which runs close to where the future West Side Park will be, the quarry park that's being filled or the tunnel being bored now. So this is that big quarry park that will be actually bigger than Piedmont Park. So that's one potential alignment. Another potential alignment is to come up this way and connect through the waterworks area.
I did not know this was going to be bigger than Piedmont. I love
yeah,
that.
That's bigger than Piedmont
I love
Park.
That. I mean, I want to get on the really early list of like cool events that we can do at that. Were they just laughing at us?
I'm not sure. I think they're really worried about me.
Can you tell them?
Or you?
When you sit down with them, can you tell them, guys, hands down, this is easily the most fun interview I've ever done?
Oh, yeah. This is.
In this job.
There's no,
in this
no
role.
Question.
I mean, in this role.
Yeah, there's no question. This is fun.
Okay,
I'm
great.
Enjoying myself.
All right. So are you ready? This is how we end every program.
Okay.
This is the Atlanta Podcast Quiz.
Oh.
Okay. Are you ready?
No. Okay. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, now I'm ready.
Okay. What is your go-to Waffle House meal?
Oh, boy. My go-to Waffle House meal. That's so funny. I have to be honest. I don't go to the Waffle House a lot.
Okay. But if you were to go?
I'm a scrambled eggs and bacon guy.
Okay.
And coffee. Just kind of, that's my go-to okay. breakfast.
If you're going to stay along in this role, you might have to start ordering the hash browns.
Yeah, I've had the hash browns. The hash browns are good. My kids love the hash browns there.
And real quick, what is your actual title?
I'm the president and CEO of the Atlanta Beltline.
Okay. What was Ryan's title?
Ryan Gravel's title? Yeah. And Ryan never worked for the Beltline.
Right.
Yeah. Ryan is an independent consultant.
He worked
for himself.
No, but didn't he work for the Beltline Partnership?
He was on the board of the Atlanta Beltline Partnership.
Okay. So you are still clearly friendly with him.
Oh, yeah. Ryan's great. Talk to him as often as I can. He's a great guy.
Oh, okay.
Gives me lots of advice. And,
okay, great.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, I know there's some stickiness there, so.
Yeah, no, Ryan's great. And Ryan, since I've been in this job for 7 months now,
You've only been in this job 7 months?
Only seven
Why
months.
Why am I talking to you?
I don't know what
you
I'm doing.
You don't know shit.
You should be talking to somebody who knows.
I bet the one who brought me coffee. How long has she been here? Like 5 years?
She's been here longer than me.
Right?
That's why I didn't know where the coffee was. I'm still learning. I don't even know where the bathrooms are around here. I'm still trying to figure it out.
I might not use this whole thing. We just talked for so long. I didn't hear such a greenhorn.
This was fun. No, I really enjoyed
this.
All right,
so, okay, what is your favorite restaurant in Atlanta, since it's clearly not the Waffle House?
The restaurant that I love taking people to is Two Urban Licks.
Mm-hmm.
I love the vibe there, and it's right on the Beltline. And it was one of the first restaurants I actually ever ate at in Atlanta. I was here for a convention years ago, and they took us to Two Urban Licks before the Beltline was even there, and I enjoyed it then.
Okay,
so I'm a big Kevin Rathbun fan.
Great, I've not had him on the show.
Steak.
I should have that guy on the show.
Yeah, you should.
Rank these in importance to you. Okay, ready?
Okay.
Braves, Falcons, Hawks, United.
Okay. Falcons, United, Hawks, and Braves.
Okay. That's where do you what neighborhood do you live in?
I like to keep that private where I live.
Okay, I wasn't going to ask you the street per se or the house address, but I was
my
just
my wife is very private.
No, totally acceptable. I was just going to say for my in-town guests, that's sort of the standard.
Yeah,
United
yeah.
is always near the top. Braves are always near the bottom.
Yeah,
that's sort of the standard in-town answer.
Yeah.
So anyhow.
But isn't it amazing what's happening with Atlanta United right now? You talk about Atlanta's culture and bringing people together.
This is another topic I'm quite skeptical about.
You are? You don't think it's going to last?
No.
Oh.
But
have you been to an Atlanta United game?
No. And
you can't judge it until you go to a game.
As listeners of this program know, I have been trying to make that happen. Like, I have a friend who's actually one of the founders of one of the many like big booster, whatever the heck you call them. Different. So I've been supposed to go to a game. Now, there's not a ton of home games. And when there's been ones, I've been out of town or whatever. So I'm going to go to one. I'm going to experience it. I'm going to interview fans. I want to dig in and experience it.
Yeah, you have to. It's like, it's unbelievable. I've been to a few games. Okay. And every time I go, I'm blown away.
The next game you go to, I'm going to follow you home and then announce where you live on this podcast. Okay. What is your favorite festival in Atlanta?
I like Shaky Knees, so I try to go to Shaky Knees. I'm a big music festival fan, so
right?
I go to the Coachella regularly.
Oh, really?
I used to live in Palm Springs.
Oh, really?
I was at the first Coachella, the very first.
Okay, do they That's kick you out, Grandpa?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a little. Talk about jumping the shark. I think.
I feel like I'm still
a little old.
I still know some of the names of the artists at Coachella. I know none of the artists at Shaky Knees.
Really?
I mean, who did they have last year that was big? Like either Weezer or 311, somebody from our generation that I knew.
Yeah. Yeah, you go to the Coachella and you definitely feel, I know I do, I feel old when you see these, the way some of these young girls are dressing. You want to grab them by their ear and yell at them and say,
I know, and I have a daughter, I'm too old for this. Like a speeding bullet train headed towards that, and I'm very frightened.
Yeah. But the Coachella is fun because you do get to experience a lot of the new bands. So we find ourselves avoiding the main stages and going into the side stages. You can usually see some great
bands. So you still fly out, make the trip, and go to Coachella?
I try to every other year. It's like a gathering of all my old friends.
What about the Tennessee one? You go to that one? We have a kind of a local one.
No.
The Bonnaroo.
Bonnaroo. Never been to Bonnaroo.
All right. Well.
No. Nope.
Okay.
But there is, at the Shaky Knees this year, there's a great new young band. I think they're from Michigan and they're called Greta Van Fleet and they sound like, Led Zeppelin. They're amazing. Three brothers and a drummer. And I highly recommend you listen to them.
I will look into them.
Good. Greta Van Fleet.
Greta Van Fleet.
Check them out.
Complete the sentence. Okay. I take Marta blank.
I take Marta to the airport, and I will this afternoon. That's,
okay.
Yeah, I'm getting on an airplane at 5:30, and I will leave my car here and take Marta to
the
airport.
Where are you off to?
I am going to the West Coast for family issues. Yeah.
Okay, the final question that I have to wrap up the Atlanta podcast quiz is, who should I have next in the Atlanta podcast?
Oh, great question. You should have... there's a young man named Rohit Malhotra. Have you heard the name?
He sounds Indian.
Yes, he is. Indian or Irish, I'm not sure.
Right.
So Rohit is the founder, CEO of the Center for Civic Innovation.
Okay.
Which is an organization that I chair, his board, and they focus on social entrepreneurship and civic engagement.
Okay.
So he's 30-something, and he's very interesting, and you should definitely have him. And I'll give you another name, is Doug Shipman,
okay,
who runs the Woodruff Arts Center.
Okay.
He's somebody else who you should, it would be fun to, you'd love to have a conversation with him on this. This would be,
all right, awesome.
Be great.
Well, I think this went phenomenally.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you for coming by. When come back, let's have another conversation.
I will.
Let's pick a topic.
Right. Let's do it.
Maybe we should do a show.
Absolutely. You know what? You could put butts in seats. I've been thinking of wanting to do a live. Seriously, I've wanted to do a live show because that's kind of a thing now. You do like the live podcast show. We could do it at whatchamacallit, the winery where all the hip events are. And like you're a relatively, like, people are like, oh, the Beltline guy. Let's figure out what the hell's going on.
Let's do that.
All right.
I'm open.
Did you enjoy that? Did you learn something? I hope you do. I hope you did. I bet you did. Awesome, guys. Thanks so much. Listen, keep the support coming. Keep the love coming. We want to spread this thing out to more ATLians, more Atlantans, more Georgians. Let's spread this thing out, man. Tell a friend. You know you guys talk about it all the time. What are you listening to?
Oh, I like this one. Oh, I like 99% Invisible. Oh, I listen to Marin. Oh, I hate fucking Joe Rogan.
Listen, tell a friend you enjoy the Atlanta podcast. Find us on social media. Instagram's the most frequent happening thing. ATL Podcast. Want to drop me a note personally? I'm Matt B. Davis at iCloud.com or Matt B. Davis on all platforms. Coming up, lots and lots of great content, guys. We are just not going to stop the train from going. We're a fast-moving bullet train of Atlanta. Think of us as a fast-moving bullet train of Atlanta. All right, I had a better analogy there. All right, guys, got to run.